Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to your podcast, Two Doctors on a Drive.
How do they know it's morning?
Well, it's just not because we said morning.
It's really not morning.
The truth is, it's not even.
Why are you trying to lie to our audience?
I don't know. Your mic is plenty loud.
Ooh, it's right in my face. Yeah. How about down? How about that?
That's all right. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah, your mic seems to be louder than mine, but that's all right.
All right.
What are we talking about today?
Hey,
let's talk about this. What kind of new recording device?
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah. Oh. We went out and spent the big money.
Oh, the poor sound quality days are over.
I think we have significantly improved our sound quality based on this purchase right here. We bought what's called the Zoom H4N Pro, and it is quite the device. I've been reading this 90-page manual and
day and night
and looking up YouTube tutorials.
Wow.
And apparently the people that are in the broadcasting/podcasting business think this thing is the cat's meow.
Whoa.
So, yeah, have you ever heard a cat meow?
I've heard one.
Yeah.
I have one.
You declawed her.
No, not yet. Not yet. That's another story.
Never coming over.
Yeah, that's another story.
Your cat bit my toe once.
Wait, my current cat?
Nope.
My last cat.
No, that cat I came over to feed your hedgehog.
I had a hedgehog.
I had to feed your damn hedgehog with mealworm.
That was albino hedgehog. How cool is that? Yeah. Okay, first of all, I found that hedgehog. Found it.
That's a story that you've tried to tell for
a long time. We don't live in Europe.
I don't believe it.
They're not just wandering our forests.
You live in a very...
go ahead and say it.
What was I going to say?
I don't know.
I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm
not really sure. Just hurry up.
Okay.
Hurry up already.
Jeez, you can't wait for 2 seconds for me to find a word? I don't even know what I was trying to say now. You definitely don't live in the jungle.
No. Or... the European forest. Listen, there are places on this planet where hedgehogs run free.
Yeah.
It's not Utah.
Not one of them.
It's not Utah. I went out to my garage one night. I don't know, take out the trash or something. And I see this little white thing scurrying by. Well, I thought it was a rat.
Yeah.
Okay, how
for sure.
Freaked out was I that I have this
big
rat. Yeah,
you were ready to go get your gun and shoot it.
I've never seen a rat around here. So okay. I was freaking out. Oh,
sure.
My gosh, I have rats? Are you freaking kidding me?
Sure.
So I run inside. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? I decide I need to investigate. I was working as a nurse at that point, and I had an early morning shift. I had to get to the hospital, so I was going to be leaving the next morning. It was in my garage, underneath my car. What? So... anyway, I got up the nerve to grab a broomstick, and in hindsight, I should have called 911. Right? What was I thinking?
Yeah, 'cause you were
handling
about to
that on my own.
About to be attacked by a
Jeez,
dragon.
Idiot. So I get down.
Poisonous serpent.
I get down, look underneath the car.
Oh my God.
And I'm it's just sitting there underneath my car, and I'm like, oh, hell no, you are not going to just park it in my garage and make home,
yeah.
You know? So I grab the broomstick and I'm going to shimmy it across the way. So I start doing that and I'm poking it out of underneath my car. And all of a sudden I see these spikes come up. It didn't make the noise. I just wanted to do that.
Well, it's radio, so you can't, I mean, you wouldn't have needed the noise if this was television.
That's true.
But it's radio.
But it would have been cool if there was actually noise from the hedgehog. But there wasn't. It was just spikes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's not a rat. That's a freaking hedgehog.
Yes.
In my garage. So I shimmied that out. Well, it just so happens I had had a pet rat. Another story for another day. And it had just died. And so I had an extra cage. So I'm like, oh, well, I'm just threw it in the cage. Happened to have a little extra, you know, bedding and maybe some rat food. And I threw it in there and decided I was going to take care of it the next day. But yeah, that's my hedgehog. Ended up staying with me for like 3.5 years.
Because of that hedgehog, your cat bit my toe.
And
I
then,
took my
and
shoes
then the
off to come
bitten.
In your house. You were out of town. I was being polite. I took my shoes off while you were out of town. You wouldn't have even noticed.
Oh, I would have known.
And your cat bit my damn toe. Okay, wait. We need to run. We're going to need to take a quick commercial break.
Commercial time.
Let our sponsors talk for just a second. But one of the things we want to do on our podcast is we're going to talk about a daily pet peeve. Can you tell me a pet peeve that you've encountered, say, in the last 10 minutes?
Okay. When I am eating at a restaurant and the food is still on my plate and I am sitting back to relax and enjoy my slow meal, because it's not just about the food, it's about the ambiance, it's about hanging out, it's about listening to music, it's about relaxing. When I'm in the middle of my Zen moment and the waiter comes up to me and says, "Are you done with that?" I want to shove the fork up his nose.
Oh my god.
No, really. No, and I've almost done that. No.
You've almost shoved the fork up.
No, it gets worse. So one time, okay, you make a mistake. I've been a server before. I know how hard it is.
Sure.
You make a mistake, you accidentally want to, because people do want their food cleared away quickly after they're done. I get it.
Sure.
Okay. So ask once, that's fine. But there's still food on the plate. And I'm talking like a substantial amount of food. It's not like I was trying to lick the end of my plate. Like, there's still a lot of food on that plate. I just happen not to be actively eating at that moment. And the guy comes up to me again, the second time, and says, "Ma'am, are you finished with that?" And it's about all I can do not to take my mashed potatoes. I don't really usually eat mashed potatoes. My rice.
What are you doing? What are you going to do with the rice? I'm
going to shove that up his nose.
Oh, my gosh. One with the fork?
Kernel at a time.
Oh, my gosh.
Are they rice kernels?
I didn't know
rice grain.
I didn't know
rice
mashed potatoes had kernels.
Something's going up that nose, and I'm not happy about it.
Apparently.
Don't ask me. Don't ask me. I will tell you when I'm done with my food. How about that?
Right.
Okay, now we can go.
There's your pet
peeve. Pet peeve of the day.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back.
Oh, welcome back.
Welcome
Cotter.
Back. I hope you have your chai tea in hand and are ready for a show.
Some podcast. Let's get to our topic.
All right.
I wanted to talk today about this little thing we call the opioid crisis.
We call it that?
Well, yes.
Okay.
We do. You know why we call it that?
Because it's on a billboard.
Because people tell us to call
okay.
it that. Yeah. That's why. But we have an opioid crisis in our country. I don't know if you know that. 72,000 people died from an overdose last year. Most of those were opioids.
That's terrible.
And that has just gone up and up and up. And it just kind of continues to... It's not really slowing down, interestingly enough. So that's we have a big crisis on our hands. One of the things I wanted to talk today about was some of the misconceptions about opiates and that sort of thing. So, first of all, just for our audience, just in case, listen, I'm pretty sure everybody knows what's going on, but just in case, what's an opiate?
An opiate, like a given example?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Common ones prescribed from a doctor would be like Lortab, hydrocodone, oxycodone, OxyContin. Percocet.
Other opiates.
Heroin.
Okay, heroin is an opiate. So opiates are really drugs that are sort of, that originally were thought to be all drugs that were derived from opium, essentially, which comes from the poppy plant. Okay?
Like my poppy seed muffins?
The same plant, different part of the plant.
I always loved those.
There's not very much opium in a poppy seed.
Mm.
And no, you can't really turn your drug test positive by eating poppy seeds.
What if
that's
I ate
a fallacy.
Like 20 from Costco?
Not 20. You're talking about 20 pounds
Ooh.
Of poppy seeds. Maybe.
I'm up for the challenge.
Okay. Well, let me know when you get fired from your job, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so heroin is an opiate. Methadone that we use is an opiate. Fentanyl is not a prescribed opiate, but it's used in hospitals sometimes during surgeries. but also is a very potent short-acting opiate that now is making its way into illegal street drugs and may even be responsible for some of the OD rise in overdose deaths that we're seeing.
Wait a second. Fentanyl's not prescribed?
Well, you can't really... Well, I'm sorry. It does come in a patch.
Okay.
You're right. I apologize. Okay. There's no such thing as a fentanyl pill that I'm aware of, but there are patches.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yep, I stand corrected there. Okay. So, anyway, those are opiates, and the mechanism of action is they go into the brain. Well, there's opiate receptors in multiple areas of the body, but they're concentrated most particularly in the brain and the GI tract. But the effects that we see, we're really talking about opiate receptors in the brain. There's three types of opiate receptors, delta, kappa, and mu. Sounds like a fraternity.
Well, yeah.
Mostly, I pledged delta, kappa, mu at one point.
Isn't there a phi?
I pledged delta, kappa, mu. You might have pledged phi, but... the receptors that we're most concerned about are mu opiate receptors. That's what causes some of the effects that we like, including the euphoria and relief of pain, are mostly from mu opiate receptors. So there are also some artificial opiates that are synthesized in labs these days that are not really directly from an opium plant. For example, tramadol, Nucynta. There's a couple of others like that that don't really come from opium or a poppy plant, but that are artificially made. But they bind to the same receptor in the brain and do the same thing. Exactly.
Okay,
well, I wanted to talk about a study that came out in a publication by the Center for Disease Control. The publication is called Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Came out March of 2017, so almost 2 years ago now. And what they did in this study is they had access to a database full of prescription information for a whole bunch of patients. And they went and studied from a time period of July of 2016 to June of, nope, from July of 2006 to June of 2015. They looked over the records of all the pharmacy records of millions and millions of patients.
13 million? Is that right?
I don't remember the number, but it was a large number of millions. They actually wound up having 1.2 million patients that qualified for the study.
Okay.
To qualify for the study, you had to be over the age of 18. You had to not have a cancer diagnosis. You had to not have a substance use disorder diagnosis. You could not receive a prescription for buprenorphine anytime during the study time period, because buprenorphine essentially is prescribed almost exclusively for opioid use disorder. I think that's the study criteria, okay?
You have to be opiate naive.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's another... part of the study criteria. You had to be opioid naive, which to them meant no opiate prescriptions for at least 6 months prior to receiving your first opiate prescription during the study time period.
I thought it was a year, but whatever. It had to be a substantial period of
time. I think it was 6 months, but but I'm not sure. I do have notes in the back seat, but I'm not going to grab them.
Good.
Yeah.
Why use them?
Who needs notes?
Exactly. Well, notes are just to be thrown away.
I remember the study, basically, but... Okay, this guy's trying to get over. So, anyway, what they were looking for is... So, they went through and they looked at everyone who got an opioid prescription. And they... I think that's where they wound up with 1.2 million... study participants, is you had to be all of those things that I just described, greater than 18, no cancer, no substance use disorder diagnosis, blah, 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 no opiate prescriptions for 6 months or a year, and then have received an opiate prescription to be included in the study. And they had 1.2 million of those. Okay. What they found was that when someone went to a physician and got an opiate prescription, and their initial opiate prescription was for 1 day's worth of opiates. Okay, so if the doctor says, prescribes you, say, Lortab, you can take one tablet every 6 hours, and it gives you three tablets. Essentially, that's a one-day prescription. Even four tablets would be a one-day prescription, right? If he gave you 10 of those, that would conceivably last you 2 or 3 days. So, anyway, everyone, the people who, so they then followed them out, okay, during the time of the study. And of people who went to their physician and got an opiate prescription, opioid-naive patients who got an opiate prescription for 1 day, 5% of those patients remained taking opiates for a 1 year. At the 1 year mark, 5% of those people were still on their opiates.
Oh, wow.
So, essentially, to me, that meant if you've been taking opiates for a year, you're essentially addicted.
Yeah.
For sure, you're physiologically dependent. And you are addicted. Now, whether you qualify for the disease of opioid use disorder or not, they didn't really study that. But
they were still taking.
But they're taking the same opiate a year later.
Which is interesting.
Or at least an opiate a year later.
If you have something, an ailment, or a issue that would require a doctor to give you a very, very, very short supply.
Right.
It's not really, you didn't just.
Not a big time issue. Right.
You didn't just have surgery.
Right. It might be a migraine.
This is like, okay, migraine.
One migraine.
Or like, maybe I have a tooth pain.
Right. You had a tooth pulled.
And here's a few for the next few hours to get you through.
So right.
It's not anything substantial.
For
normally,
sure. The injury is not a big time injury. Exactly.
So super interesting that those people.
5% of those.
Okay.
Still on an opiate.
Okay.
Okay. Well, what they found was as the length of time of the initial opiate prescription went up, so did the percentage of people still on that opiate at the 1 year mark. So people got an initial 5 day supply, which isn't that difficult. Break an arm, you're probably getting 5 days of opiates.
I would think. Maybe even a sprained ankle.
Maybe, yeah, for sure. So 10% of those people were still on an opiate at the 1 year mark. If the initial supply of opiates was 10 days, 20% of those people were still on an opiate at the 1 year mark. And if the initial supply of opiates was for 30 days. Now, this is starting to be like a significant injury of some sort, right?
Yeah, 30 days. I mean, that's a surgery.
If you need 30 days of opiates, that's a hip replacement, maybe. It's probably not just a broken arm, but maybe a broken arm with a plate inserted, or, you know, that's a significant something to get 30 days worth of opiates, or an ultra-liberal physician.
Or somebody who already has an addiction. But, you know, just a quick little, one of my teeth I got pulled by the dentist that was perfectly fine. Now, this is when I'm already an addict, right?
Okay.
Had no issues, but I knew he'd give me some opiates.
Okay.
So I went in there, complain. He can't find anything, of course, because there's nothing to be found. Go back in again. I'm like, I can't take this. It hurts so bad. He had already given me some non-narcotic medications to try to manage it and do his little stuff in the office. And finally, he gives me 16 days of Lortab.
Okay.
Exactly what I wanted, right, for my tooth pain. Well, actually, he pulled the tooth. I got a perfectly healthy tooth pulled.
Right.
But then I went back and said, I still need some more, and I got maybe another 10 or 12 out of it. So,
okay,
so
but
sometimes you can.
But I'm going to make 2 points here. First of all, if you're listening and you're not an addict, that story that Christian just told probably sounds ridiculous to you.
What?
To those of us that are addicts, we understand that.
Everybody doesn't get their healthy teeth pulled?
No. Non-addicts tend not to do that. No. But I will also tell you that you probably wouldn't have qualified for this study.
No, you're
right?
Right. You're
because
right.
You had had opiates in the previous year.
No, I wouldn't have qualified.
And your initial prescription wasn't for 30 days either.
Yeah.
You might have gotten ultimately 30 days worth, but you don't go in with a bad tooth and have a guy write you 30 days worth of opiates.
Well, except we did just go to that conference where the dentist was talking about how they're routinely giving 30-day supplies for wisdom teeth.
Yeah.
Right? So,
that's
true. That is an issue.
It's possible, for sure. It's possible. Okay, so Anyway, 45% of the people that got a 30-day prescription were still on an opiate at the one-year mark.
That is unbelievable. So
almost 50% of them are addicted to the opiate that they take. Now, one of the things that came out of this for me was just to understand how addictive these things are. I'm not sure that from the results of the study, I can't say anybody in the study did anything wrong. But I can tell you that after I read that study, one of the things, I don't really practice medicine where I would give out a narcotic anymore. I used to, back when I was an obstetrician. After somebody had a baby, you'd give out, at least a week's worth. If somebody had a C-section, that was 30 days worth.
Yeah.
A bunch of times. So I used to do that, but I don't do that anymore because I practice only addiction medicine. But if I were practicing traditional medicine and occasionally handing out opiates, I think after this study, I would for sure counsel my patients on how addictive these things are and how careful they need to be with them.
Well, and patients on their own, because how many patients do we have? And I really believe this story of I got addicted after a surgery.
Yes.
They had no intention. Yes. First of all, nobody wakes up wanting to become a drug addict.
Right.
But these people really quite innocently started taking opiates because they were prescribed them for fill in the blank. And then they decided that they couldn't get off of them.
Right.
For whatever reason. And that wasn't their intention, you know. So I think that this is really important to educate patients about, but also family members.
For sure.
You know, in the middle of it, you just had this major surgery. Family members need to pay attention to the prescriptions that you're taking and what our loved ones are doing and you know, making sure that they have follow-ups and that they're not continuing on these medications and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that we all need to just be very aware of what's going on.
Perfect. You know who else needs education on this? The doctors prescribing the meds. I didn't know these things were this addictive.
Yeah.
I had no idea, and I've prescribed opiates before. I don't think anybody understood how addictive these things are.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I don't think most people still understand that. Anyway, my point being with this is, first of all, it was a big study, 1.2 million participants, 33,000 total people that continued an opiate for a year. And second of all, it was published in the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, which is a fairly wide read source of studies. Like, that's coming straight out of the CDC, and it's pretty good info. This isn't some throwaway journal this is directly from the CDC, and these are things that people read, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. So, I still think a lot of people don't understand this information, though. And I still think we need to figure out, I still think we need to educate how addictive these things are, for sure.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, I think a lot of people think, well, it could never happen to me, because I couldn't possibly be a drug addict because I'm smart totally capable. My life's put together, and I have willpower, and I have control, and I can stick to a routine, and you know, all of these things that, you know, think, well, that would never happen to me, until it does.
Right. First of all, none of those characteristics really relate to drug addiction, right? I think I look at the two people in this car right now, we're not really stupid.
We're
not less intelligent than the normal person in the population. I'm not saying we're in the top 1%, but we're not in the bottom 1% either. Dog tried to run in front of me there for a second.
Seriously.
In a car. Okay, well, I think that's the gist of the study that I wanted our audience to understand is, first of all, how addictive these things are. And then when we come back from a break, I think we want to talk about how effective they are for long-term use anyway.
Yeah. Like, why are we even using
them? I mean, somebody's still on it at the year mark. Is it working for them?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Let's talk about that next. You know, but I'm guessing, back to this original study, these people who are given the one-day supply, that's not chronic pain.
No.
Right?
This is
acute pain only. This is for acute pain that somehow turned into chronic pain. Now, when I read this study, and I read some of the comments.
It's for acute pain that turned into chronic opioid use.
Okay, all right, well. my point is this. I read the study, and then I like to read the comments underneath the studies just to kind of get an idea of what the public's thinking about these things as they're reading them. And so many comments were, you guys don't understand. This is for chronic pain. People need opiates. What about my chronic pain? What about my, you know, pain that can't be managed any other way? And I think that's when we get into issues.
Wait. You and I were sitting in an opioid use conference sponsored by Senator Mike Lee. Remember this? Okay, I lost you for a sec because you're trying to figure out where your car is. Huh?
No, you know what I just remembered?
What?
I drove boyfriend's car today.
Oh.
So we're looking for the wrong car. It's stolen.
That's hilarious.
No.
We can't find it. We can't find it. There's, it's not there. Is that it right there?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense now. Kind of hilarious. Wait, what did you just say, though, that struck me?
Yeah, so the comments were about, hey, well, what about my pain and what about chronic pain? Some people really need it. So I think that that's the perfect lead into our next subject that we'll bring up after the break is
Don't go to break just yet, though.
How effective are opiates?
Remember, we were sitting in the opioid abuse conference sponsored by Senator Lee, and there was a panel about opiate abuse, right? And when the panel was done speaking, some lady in the audience, wait, her and her pharmacist had to stand up and talk about what about us that need our pain pills for the rest of our lives. And I think some people are sold on the fact that they might need pain pills for the rest of their lives.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's one of the, that's what we're going to talk about next is how effective are these things if you're going to use them for long term.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
See you soon. I'm back.
Yes, you are. What do we still have to talk about?
Well, we just finished up talking about opioids and the various degrees of being on it in a year.
Yep.
If the more you are prescribed originally. Correct. Does that sound about right?
That's about right. So I guess what we learned out of that last study was that they're fairly addictive and more addictive than we thought. More addictive than I thought, for sure. All right, well, sometimes opiates are used for chronic pain.
Sometimes.
Despite, well, not all the time, but well, frequently.
Well, like I was saying, one of the issues that people were having with that last study, or the last statistics, was, well, what about chronic pain?
Yeah.
Of course people need opiates for more than a year if they have chronic pain, right?
Okay, so we want to talk about, there's a pretty good healthy amount of studies in the literature about the use of opioids for chronic pain. And for the most part, they generally tend to turn out to where opiates aren't all that helpful over other methods of chronic pain treatment. But there was a meta-analysis done in JAMA that Kristen's going to tell us about right now.
Oof, on the spot?
Yeah, I think you can do it.
So this was a meta-analysis of 96 clinical trials. So it's substantial study, 26,000 people involved in the study.
For our audio audience, a meta-analysis is a statistical way of combining disparate or not exactly equal studies, and it's pretty complicated, but it gives you the power at the end to include multiple studies, and this one included, you said, 96.
96.
Okay, so they have gone and combined essentially 96 studies, which increases the power. The meta-analysis makes it way more powerful than
a single
individual study.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so this one specifically was talking about they were using opioids versus placebos.
Okay.
So nothing that could even potentially
cause some pain
management. So the conclusion of that study, by the way, it mentioned that there are 50 million, currently 50 million U.S. American citizens saying that they have chronic pain. Chronic pain is pain on more days than not for the past, 6 months?
I think 6 months, yeah.
So a lot of pain. That's 20% of our population. Wow. Says that they have chronic pain, pain on more days than not for the past 6 months. But
okay, but not that hard to qualify for, right? Do you have pain on most days?
I have pain on most days.
Okay.
I could definitely qualify for the under that guideline of chronic pain.
Hangnail?
I hate my hangnails.
Okay.
They're the worst. They're so chronic.
Yeah, they are. Sorry. I got off track.
Yeah, no, you're fine. So anyway, this meta-analysis essentially is saying, oh, and I'm on call and I have to take
okay,
that.
Okay,
so
pause.
Hold on. Hi, this is Dr. Brown. Hey, Klein.
All right, we're back.
Work okay. Sometimes trumps, especially when I'm
work
on the on-call.
We agree.
Anyway, this study showed that the placebos, the difference between the opiates and the placebos was not statistically significant, which is actually quite incredible. The fact that we are pushing so hard for these opiates that have such a significant risk potential to them and such a terribly low to non-existent benefit for chronic pain.
Yeah.
So that was a really interesting study as far as the recognition that people just don't get better on opiates. And we understand why, right? Because you build up a tolerance. If it's an opiate, you are going, even if you're taking it as prescribed, you're not abusing them. You know, we get patients a lot of times saying, well, I don't abuse my opiates. You're still going to build up a tolerance over a certain period of time. It might take you a little bit longer if you're actually using them as prescribed than somebody who immediately abuses them. But at some point, that opiate's going to stop working.
Yeah, I think that's one of the hallmarks of a medication that's addictive is you can develop tolerance to virtually all addictive medications.
Yeah.
You and I know we've seen recent studies where they compare it to non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen and to Tylenol, which is not a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, and the difference in those is almost unmeasurable sometimes.
So this is a different study from JAMA titled Opioids No Better Than Non-Opioids in Improving Pain-Related Function Intensity for Chronic Back Pain, Hip and Knee Osteoarthritis. Okay. So this was 240 patients with chronic back pain or hip and knee osteoarthritis pain divided into two different treatment groups.
Okay.
So one group received opioids, one group received non-opioid medications. So this was different than the meta-analysis. This is now actually using Tylenol or NSAIDs or something other than the opiates,
right.
Yep. After 12 months, researchers found no differences between the groups' reported improvement in function and a slightly better, this one is really interesting, a slightly better improvement rate in pain intensity for the non-opioid group.
Wow.
So it's actually in this study better. So the placebo one, the opioids won out just by a little bit. It was, at the end of that study, it was a 12% of the people using opioids at a year mark said they had improved pain management over the placebo, okay?
Right, over nothing.
This one says that the non-narcotic pain management medications were better than the opioids.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Pretty significant.
Super impressive, because how many times do we have people with, well, I have to be on opiates forever because I have low back pain. You know, I had a L4, L5 disectomy. Okay. So now what? And it's been 7 years.
Right.
And now what?
Right.
Okay. At some point, you're going to need to make the decision that opioids don't work for you anymore, that you just might be addicted to them and might need to try other things. Sure. And that's a really hard conversation. I go into work, I'm sitting in front of the hospital right now, where I know I'm going to have to go in and convince 3 of my patients, maybe more, but I know these for sure 3, in that they might want to consider not using opiates for the rest of their life for their fibromyalgia.
And it's a tough sell, right?
Oh, it's draining. And it's the same conversation every day.
It's a tough sell because people are getting a little buzz out of their opiates, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, well, we're about out of time, but I wanted to finish on just one brief thing that's going on. So there was a recent publication that talked about, thing that happened in Tennessee that I wanted to talk about, and there was an article printed on it. Not, this is not a study. This was just a printed article. There's an article printed about it, and the article starts with, imagine if there were more opioid prescriptions than there are patients.
Yeah, wow.
And then it goes on to say that's the case in Tennessee. Tennessee, there were more opioid prescriptions written than there are actual citizens of the state of Tennessee.
Jeez.
So, pretty ridiculous, right? Well, Tennessee's decided to kind of crack down on this. And so Tennessee has just barely passed regulations that
Tennessee's getting hit with all kinds of things. I mean, they were the gabapentin.
Yeah.
Don't move to Tennessee.
Stuff's bad in Tennessee.
It's a bad idea. Maybe Tennessee's the problem.
I can't find the regulations exactly. However, let me tell you this. What I know about what Tennessee has done is, now, if you are a physician in Tennessee, you can give out a 3-day supply of opioids without a whole lot of regulation happening.
Okay.
If you want
to.
So
you have sprained your ankle, you have a broken tooth.
Yep.
You have maybe even a kidney stone.
Yep, sure.
Okay.
However, if you want to give out more than 3 days, you have to meet a bunch of requirements. And those requirements are the following. You have to have done a complete and thorough physical examination on the patient, which only makes sense, right? You should probably do that before you give out 3 days worth of opiates,
yeah,
but whatever. But you have to look at the controlled substance database in the state of Tennessee about the patient, so you can see if the patient has gotten other pain prescriptions recently. You have to write the ICD-10, which is, ICD-10 is a book called International Classification of Diseases. It's the 10th edition, and it has codes for virtually every condition that humans can run upon as a human being, every medical condition.
Do they count 7 fingers? Is there a medical?
I don't know.
ICD-10?
I'll have to look that
you
up.
You said every. We should find out.
I don't know that. Have you documented a person with 7 fingers yet?
I feel like there was one on Princess Bride. And we need to go find him.
Okay. Okay, but you need to have... So you check the controlled substance database. You have to have an ICD-10 code and write it on the prescription and in the chart. What else was there? That's all I can remember. But it just made it a little more onerous for people to try to get longer-term prescriptions. And really, that's based on a couple of things. And one is this study that shows that long-term treatment with opiates isn't very effective.
And
now, for short-term, they're great.
And there's a very high risk
of developing addiction
with long-term use.
I just finished your sandwich.
I know. It was delicious.
I didn't mean to do that. You can write up to, eventually you can write up to a 30-day prescription, but you have to have, if you get to 30 days, you have to have a trial or at least documentation of why you can't use any other alternatives.
Or that you have,
or
you
at least
failed.
Have to have a trial, or have contraindications to doing so, right?
Yeah.
So Tennessee's trying to crack down a little bit, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Let's not make it super easy for people to go out and get 30 days worth of opiates, because one of the things we know from our first study is that person has a 45% chance of getting addicted to it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do we have patients coming in who have they were just given 540 Lortab?
Jeez.
Like, that's still happening.
That's incredible.
It's unbelievable. That's you think that they're not going to abuse those.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
For sure.
Anyway, yeah, one of the other issues they pointed out in the meta-analysis is how frequently we just jump to opiates without even doing a single other, let's try this first. And then what happens is the opioid isn't working after a while. So what does the doctor do? They don't discontinue the opioid. Is our car singing to us?
Yes, your seatbelt's not
on. Oh, shoot, seatbelts. I'm so busted.
Oh my gosh,
put it on.
Okay.
So instead of going to a different medication or a different treatment option, they increase the dose.
Yeah.
That's the answer to opioids aren't working for me. Oh, okay, you need more.
Yeah.
And more and more. Instead of actually deciding, you know what, opioids aren't the answer for you.
Let's try something different.
Yeah, good
point. Really good point. So in wrap up, we got to wrap this up, but what I've learned today, basically, although I probably knew it before today, but in putting all this stuff together is, one, there's a fairly high rate of addiction, and it gets higher the longer you use the opiates. So we know that opiates are relatively and not are quite addictive. Number two, the stuff you quoted, there's not much difference between opiates and placebo for long-term use.
Hi, this is Dr. Brown. Gosh, sorry.
That's all right. Okay, we're about wrapped up. The second thing we learned is they're barely superior to nothing, and they're not really superior at all to other alternative forms of pain relief. And then lastly, just reviewed the stuff about Tennessee and what Tennessee's trying to do to crack down. This is coming nationwide. We're all going to have to do this because of the opioid crisis, I think.
But
opioids aren't as great as they seem, and they are as damaging as they seem.
Yeah.
That's what I get out of this.
Yeah. So, and I think it's going to be painful for the nation and a lot of individuals. It's really hard to give up that I need opiate mindset.
No question.
But there are fortunately professionals out there who can help people through this process. And I happen to be one of them as I'm going into the hospital to deal with several of them today.
Well, can I wish you good luck?
Yeah, I'm going to need it.
Good luck.
I'm going to need it, but you know what? I'm willing to fight the fight because this is important.
I agree.
This is important.
I agree. All right.
All right.
Well, thanks, everybody. Have a beautiful week.
Beautiful weekend.
Okay.
Enjoy.
We'll talk to you next week.